This is Older and Wiser. I'm your host, Mariah Dennis. For Mainers across the state, this summer has been like no other. This is a strange summer in a year filled with uncertainty. The coronavirus pandemic has changed the world in unsettling ways for us all. But senior citizens in particular have had to change their everyday lives because they're at higher risk of serious health complications due to COVID-19. Over the next hour, you'll hear from older Mainers on how their lives have been impacted by the pandemic and listen to their advice on how to navigate these unprecedented times. Like most people, I've been feeling uncertain about the future lately. This spring, I graduated from the University of St. Andrews in Scotland, but I was born and raised outside of Bangor. In the middle of March, my classes were put online for the rest of the semester. A few weeks later, I flew back home to Maine with no clear plan for the future. And now, as a fresh college graduate thrown into the real world in the middle of a pandemic, I'm at home and still trying to figure out what's next. And so for this radio show, I went looking for advice from Mainers who are older and certainly wiser than me. In terms of demographics, Maine is the oldest state in the nation. Nearly 20% of the state's entire population is aged 65 or over. And over the past few months, seniors have had to be especially cautious because they're at much higher risk of complications as a result of COVID-19. This year, many of us have faced uncertainty like never before. But our state is home to many older people who've lived through difficult times throughout their own lives and are stronger for it today. I wanted to talk to seniors to find out how they've been dealing with the pandemic over the past several months and what advice they have for someone who's just getting on their feet in the world in 2020. Over the next hour, I'll be sharing my conversations with seniors from across Maine. Due to COVID, I wasn't able to sit down with anyone in person and have an interview, so you'll be hearing recordings from my hours of phone calls. My talks with the seniors range from what they wish they had known at my age to thoughts on the future of Maine, and so much more. No matter if you're a young adult just starting out in the world or someone who's lived in Maine their whole life, you'll want to hear the advice these seniors have to share. The first person I called was John Dudley. John was born over the border in St. Stephen, New Brunswick in 1939, but he grew up in Calais. He taught fifth grade for many years, and today he's retired and lives with his wife, Marie, in Alexander. For John, the past few months have mostly meant life as normal.
The pandemic has really done nothing to affect my life. Now, I can not say the same for Marie, my wife. When she goes to town to get food, she sips in and out of stores quickly and does not visit with the many people there that she knows. But also, where we live 17 miles from the border. At Calais, and Marie grew up in a place called Launch Station in New Brunswick, a little village, and she knows probably as many or maybe more Canadians than she knows Americans, and they're not allowed to come across the border now, so the people she sees that she knows is only about half what normally she sees.
With the Canadian border closed, John and Marie are cut off from many people they know. But otherwise, life in Alexander hasn't changed much.
If we were working age, we would be probably feel constrained, but not this way, because normally I spend half a day in the woods. That's my pleasure, one of them. I spend half a day doing what I've been just doing here, researching and writing history. And then I spend a lot of time with Marie. She's my big interest.
Hope Prout, who was born in 1943 and raised her family of six in Jonesboro, now spends her winters living in California. This year, after a knee replacement, she ended up with a fractured femur, which kept her off her feet while on the West Coast. But when the coronavirus started spreading across the U.S. in March, she knew she had to get home quickly, despite her injury.
That was when the corona started, so they packed me up and we headed east.
Oh, wow. So you had to travel at a very uncertain time.
Yeah, it was fine. You know, we were cautious all the way across, and we had packed a cooler with food. And the last day, we didn't want to stay in New York, so my son drove all night, and we got here about 6:30 in the morning. So,
jeez, it sounds like quite the journey.
I was fine. It worked out good. I do believe you have to be cautious and wash your hands, and that's what we did all the way across country. We would stop, get gas, go to the restroom, and wash our hands, get back in the car, and sanitize. So, you know, the three of us, we made it fine, and like I say, we quarantined for 2 weeks.
Ida Hatch and Frank Gray were both born in the hospital in Bar Harbor in November 1929. Both of them have lived most of their lives on Mount Desert Island, but they haven't seen a summer like this in a long time. Yeah, have you ever seen the islands so quiet?
No. Maybe when we were in high school, because we could walk to town and back, and you'd let your kids ride their bicycles and go to town and not have to worry.
Bill Horner was also born in Bar Harbor in 1941, and he was raised on MDI. In the early part of the summer, he couldn't believe how quiet the island was.
Bar Harbor normally is almost impossible to get through in the summertime with the cruise ships and just normal influx of summer visitors. Of course, all of the businesses that have come about in the last two or three decades that caters to transients, restaurants, you know, the summer concerts on the Village Green in Bar Harbor, just all of that sort of hubbub of normal summer activity just simply isn't there.
For some, like Bill, life in rural Maine means it's pretty easy to socially distance in the middle of a pandemic.
Well, yes, obviously life is very, very different. Although I have to say that, again, living in an area of relatively low population density, being oriented to the outdoors, it's been a fairly easy proposition for my wife and I to socially distance, in the physical sense at least. We spend a lot of time hiking, being outside as much as possible. But it's had a pretty profound effect on our family relationships.
Bill's a retired surgeon who spent many years working in the Bangor area. His kids and grandchildren usually spend a number of weeks up in Maine every summer. But when they came up this year, things were different.
And so what the COVID thing has necessitated, of course, is their quarantining for the first 2 weeks that they were here, which was hard because you want to hug those kids. Had to wait 2 weeks. But we're fortunate because, you know, we can have family gatherings yet maintain enough distance outside. Wind is usually blowing pretty well. We use masks, of course. So, you know, it's, yes, it's different. But we've been able to maintain through Zoom with our West Coast kids and other sort of digital means contact.
Bill Irvine, who was born in Scotland but has lived in Brooklyn, Maine for many years, also didn't find that the pandemic changed his day-to-day life that drastically.
Since the, you ought to know, first of all, that I'm an artist and I paint every day. Basically, I paint every day. And when the pandemic came, I was more or less doing what I always do. I was in my studio painting, and I don't go out a lot at that time. When I'm painting, I paint all day. And it is, in a sense, painting most of your life for a painter, most of that is being in isolation. So there wasn't a great change when the pandemic came. I was doing much the same thing as I've been doing all year and most of my life, which is standing in my studio painting. And so when the pandemic came, I'm still in my studio painting, and I had an exhibition I was working for. So I had a lot of work to do, and I spent most of my time in my studio painting and then framing the paintings and then taking them into the gallery. The only sign of the pandemic for me was once I got into Ellsworth and people are wearing face masks. And when I go to the gallery, the gallery attendant and the owners, they're wearing face masks. And I am too, actually, when I go into it. And that's the first time I think I wore a face mask is when I went into the gallery. Since then, of course, I've gone shopping and I wear a face mask, but it hasn't been terribly upsetting because, as I say, my routine hasn't really changed much. And also, you know, where I live here, I live on the course on the water in Brooklyn. I live on the water. And when I go walking, taking my dog, I've got a Scottish sheepdog and a Sheltie, and she's 10 years old, and I take her walking every day, and I take her along the beach, and there's no one else, actually. Well, early in the summer, there was no one at all on the beach. You know, maybe one neighbor followed up, would show up, but mostly there is nobody walking on the beach. So that too was a kind of isolation. So I was able to do that, get fresh air, get exercise, and along with my dog. And the two of us got all the exercise we need. And that's how it's been. As I say, the only time I really know much about what's going on with is reading about it, seeing on television, knowing that it's a lot of places in this country are really suffering badly. But here in Hancock County, cases are very, very, very few, many few cases. And so I feel kind of privileged. I walk by myself, I walk on the beach, and when I go into town, it's not a dangerous place to be. So I feel very comfortable.
But some of Bill's family members, who still live in Scotland, caught the coronavirus this spring. His brother, who lived in Edinburgh, passed away from COVID-19.
He was 90, and his wife, my sister-in-law, she also caught it at the same time, and she was 94. Now she survived, and it's her birthday next week, and she's 95. And she's on vacation going to visit her daughters in London. So that was the bad news was my brother dying. The good news is that this person who's 95 years old now, recovered, and is alive and well. So that's a good sign for elderly people to know that can happen.
COVID-19 is a scary and serious disease. Thousands and thousands of people from around the world have battled it this year, and the U.S. is still struggling to manage the pandemic. Living in Maine, which has largely managed to control the spread of the coronavirus, means that many of us can feel disconnected from the rest of the world. But while the lifestyle for many seniors in Maine means that the pandemic hasn't changed day-to-day life that drastically, the isolation and social distancing required by COVID hasn't been easy, no matter how old you are. Over the past few months, we've all experienced more anxiety and loneliness as we try to stay connected. Gail Sprague was born in Machias and has lived there all her life. She raised 4 children and now lives 2 streets down from the house she was born in. When I asked her how she's been faring over the past few months, this is what she said.
I've been going slowly out of my mind. I don't know. I didn't find it as bad as everybody wants me to, because I'm used to coming in the house. I was volunteering at the courthouse on Mondays and Fridays, and lots of times I'd come in on Monday afternoon after work and not leave again until Friday. So it really hasn't been that. It's just inconvenient because I knew I couldn't go.
Everyone I talked to agreed that they've never experienced anything like the pandemic and the shutdown before. But for Frank, who's 90 and who's lived on MDI for most of his life, the social distancing and family separation reminded him of wartime.
Can you remember a time that was anything like this?
No. I was married, and 2 months later I went in the service. That was quite a shock. While I was in the service, my eldest son was born. I was home on furlough when he was born. He was 8 days old when I left to go overseas, and he was 19 months old when I see him again. He looked at me, started bawling.
Oh, he didn't recognize you.
But I got over that, okay, and so forth. We got home, everything got back to normal, I thought. But then this thing, it was like Ada's eldest son started to come for a visit. He lives in Vermont. He got to New Hampshire, talked to some of his sisters, and talking with them, he turned around in New Hampshire and went back home. So we haven't seen him since. She has another son that's in Michigan, is it? And we'd love to see him, but he doesn't know when he might be able to come again.
It's so hard because it's so uncertain. No one knows when things will look more normal.
Hey, you don't know what's happening, what's going to happen.
You're listening to Older and Wiser. So far this hour, you've been hearing seniors from across Maine on how they've been coping with the past few months of the pandemic. Next up, we're hearing advice from older and wiser Mainers to young Mainers, like me. I'm Mariah Dennis. I just graduated college this spring, and over the summer, I've been seeking advice from seniors from across Maine. Although not everyone was convinced they had that much advice to offer, here's Gail.
Well, I don't have many words of wisdom, I don't think, but...
Gail is being modest. Everyone can learn something from Maine seniors on how to navigate the world today. To start it off, I was curious about what the seniors I talked to were doing back when they were my age.
Oh, my word. You expect me to remember that? Let me see. When I was... I already had my first child. So I was being a mom.
That's Gail again from Achias. Here's Hope from Jonesboro.
So I'm 22 right now. Can you remember where you were living or what you were doing when you were 22?
Oh, I was married. I probably had 3 children. When we got married, we had bought my grandparents' house in North Lubeck, and we had a wood furnace and a old-fashioned washing machine where you hung the clothes on the line. And
it was hard for me to imagine how different Hope and Gail's lives would have been when they were my age. Others told me that they were already in school or well into their working years. I asked Bill, the retired surgeon from MDI, what he wished he had known at my age.
I guess I wish I had known how to make better choices. I think being 20, 22, you've got such a broad palette of possibility. And it is absolutely necessary, I think, that at that point, you have to start narrowing the field. I always felt when I was in college, it was a lot like climbing a tree. And there are all these branches coming off. And at some point, you kind of have to make a choice about which branch you're going to take, or maybe you're going to try to do 2 or 3 at the same time. But it isn't just the process of sitting in place where the branch originates from the trunk of the tree. You have to kind of literally go out on the limb. And the further you go out on the limb, sometimes it's difficult to get back to the trunk of the tree.
John wished he had spent more time being a kid.
Oh, I wish I had spent time. First of all, I worked almost all the time all the way through high school. And I wished at this point, I wish I had spent more time in regular high school activities, kids, things kids do, going to dances. I did play in the band, but other than that, I didn't do any school activities. I worked.
And Frank wished he'd paid more attention in school.
What do you wish you had known when you were my age?
Oh, so much. I wished I had paid a hell of a lot more attention when I was in school to what I was supposed to have done. So that maybe I wouldn't have had to have worked so damn tired.
When he had an opportunity to raise up, so to speak, he didn't realize until later he should have taken the chance. But he was married and had a child.
And I asked others, if you could go back in time to any point in your life, would you? Most people said no. Here's John.
I don't think so.
Why not?
Well... you know, I've done that, and that's has made me what I am today. But all the way along, is I've made mistakes, and I'm still making mistakes, but I'm still doing things. And the only people who make mistakes are those who do things or say things. I'm quite happy doing what I am.
Hope was nostalgic for the easy summer days of childhood.
If you could go back to any age in your life, would you?
Oh, I don't know. I remember being, as a kid, my mother and her friend would take us to the beach, and the friend would make a fish chowder out by the water, and that was like, I can just remember that was so wonderful. And, you know, even though we didn't have much, we, you know, you just did those little things like that, and you didn't realize you didn't have much. You thought you had everything. So, I don't know.
And for Gail, the answer was also unclear.
I don't know. Some days I would, but no. Well, maybe back to my 50s, because then I would be young enough to motorcycle and do different things that I never did because my husband didn't care for motorcycles. And you know, just different things that I didn't do because he didn't like it. So that would be the only, see, I fooled you, didn't I? You thought I was going to say back to my 20s. That's too far back, and no, I wouldn't want to have to do that again.
No one I've talked to has wanted to go that far back. I think there's a lot of uncertainty at this age. Whereas I imagine, you know, as you get older, you grow more sure of yourself and more confident.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. You do. You grow more sure of what you are doing and what you want to do.
For Ada and Frank, who are both 90 years old and live on Mount Desert Island, age helps them find their way back to each other again. The two first dated when they were in high school, but they called it off.
Do you know why you stopped dating originally?
She got mad at me, you know.
not exactly quite, but I didn't know how to talk to him, so I just broke it off. So, and these about 15 fellows came back from World War II and took postgraduate courses. So I got lured away after graduation.
Ada married a man who had just served in World War II, and she worked as a nurse's aide and bookkeeper over the years. She went on to have 7 children. Frank went into the service as well and married a woman from the island and raised 2 boys while working as a mason. Frank and Ada would occasionally see each other and say hello now and then, but that was it. After decades of marriage for both of them, their spouses passed away. And one day in 2014, Frank called Ada up and asked her to dinner.
Yeah, I was married 66 years.
66?
Yes.
That's amazing.
Yes, I've never been single very long.
And so when you got back together, how did that start?
Oh, he tried to wait till my husband had been buried at least a month before he called up.
Frank, is that true? Were you waiting a month?
Maybe a little
it
more.
It was quite difficult, but I did. I gave her a month to grieve a little.
Because he'd been a widow for 2 years.
Okay.
I was I told him I was knee deep into sympathy cards when he talked.
A few months later, when Frank and Ada were both 85, they were married. They now have many handfuls of grandchildren between the two of them, and a busy calendar of birthdays to keep up with.
What makes you happiest in life, and how did you find out what made you really happy?
With me, it was finding Ada again. She's made me very, very happy.
Stories like Ada and Frank's make me feel hopeful about the world. But the past few months have been so hard for so many people across Maine and around the world. And so I wanted to ask every senior I talk to about how they manage to keep going when times are tough. Many people said they turn to their families in times of struggle. Here's Gail.
Very difficult. It's very, very difficult to do. You have to be a very strong, positive person.
Do you have ways that you find the positivity?
My way is to talk to my daughters. Not everybody can do that.
For Bill Horner, family also keeps him going.
Well, I think the thing that really keeps me going is my wife, the relationship. But we share all of this. That's the thing. It's sort of the essence of being a couple, I think, is having things that speak to you automatically that you don't really even have to acknowledge, but it's something that you that's just tied into your relationship. And you know, when I get a little cranky sometimes, occasionally, possibly, it doesn't take much for her to sort of bring me back. And but it's just, I think it's, you know, it's the joy. And the other thing is with the children, the kids, both our own offspring and theirs, seeing seeing a sense that somehow you've passed this on, you know, it kind of gives you a feeling when you're an older person, you know, a little bit of a sense of legacy. It isn't necessarily anything that you've accomplished in your profession or career, but it's the sense of seeing joy in a grandchild that you know is the same joy that you felt.
Bill finds solace in music as well.
My family, we're very musical. My dad actually was a music major in college. And my mother loved the classical music of the Romantic era, you know, the 19th century. And I think what I found was that I could listen to certain of that symphonic music, and no matter where I was, and it would bring me back to the island that I grew up on in many instances, and I would just have this feeling of profound happiness come over me. You know, it was I don't know, it was just something about having an identity with place, having family that loved that place, that sort of created your identity, and then having a vehicle, i.e. the music that you really loved, that tied itself to that. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, it transported you back to really happy times.
For me, at least, throughout life, the sort of the well that I've gone back to when I've needed to pull myself together in times of challenge, And what it is, I think it's a sort of profound sense of remembering happiness.
Hope tries to keep tough times in perspective.
Can you think of a time in your life when you had a hard time or you were struggling? Can you tell me how you got through it or what advice you would have for people who are going through a hard time?
Well, actually, if I went through a hard time, I didn't really realize it.
What do you mean by that?
Well, I don't remember going through a hard time. If we did, my mother must have kept it quiet. And then after I got married, well, the first winter we were married, maybe we struggled a little bit. I know my husband went clamming a lot, and we ate a lot of clams. But after that, everything seemed to come together. And, you know, I don't think I've had a very hard life.
Bill Irvine, the Scottish artist, went through a handful of difficult years when he was an up-and-coming artist trying to make it in London.
When I graduated from the Glasgow School of Art, I was 18. And at that time, you had to serve in the army for 2 years. So I served in the Scottish Army. I was stationed in Germany. This was 1959 or so. I served in the army in Germany for 2 years. When I came out, that's when I went to London. When I was 22 years old, I had my ambition was to be successful as an artist. And so I was in London, and I had basically no income whatsoever. You know, I didn't have a job. I tried to take part-time jobs like bartending, things like that, so I could paint as well. It was a very difficult life. But in those days in London, there were a lot of other people doing the same thing. So it was a very bohemian life. People helped you. You helped others. If someone had a job and had some extra money, they bought you a meal. Or if you did, you were the excellent, you bought them a meal. It was a very help. Everybody was very helpful. I spent about 3 or 4 years without having a proper job.
He taught part-time to make ends meet and eventually met an American girl who he married and followed to the U.S. But in the period of his early 20s, the only thing keeping him going was his dedication to becoming a great artist.
Did you always know you wanted to be an artist?
Always. I think I started to paint when I was 9 years old. And I've been painting ever since I was 9. But there was that period when you're talking about 22 years old. I only had ambition and a desire to continue working as an artist and not having a steady income, not wanting to take something that would take up all my time. I had an idea of what I wanted to do. I knew what I wanted to do, actually. And whatever other things had to fit in, because I did not deviate from my desire to be an accomplished artist. So I continued to do that, even though times were very difficult.
Many of the seniors I talked to got through hard times by relying on family and their own inner determination. And for Frank and Ada, they told me that they rely on faith.
Do you both have a time, can you think of a time when, maybe similar to now, but when something, you're really struggling with something or you're going through a hard time? And then how did you get through that hard time?
Through having faith.
How do you keep faith, though, when you're not sure about the future? You're not feeling hopeful?
Well, maybe if you're brought up to go to Sunday school and your mother goes with you. Oh, I don't know. It's just, well, and you know you're parents are, you know, they're putting their faith in you when you're growing up. When you leave home and you're 13 to go to high school, you don't want to do things to upset your parents. Maybe you have more respect for people. I had breast cancer when my oldest son was 19 and he was going to be going in the Air Force. And I had a mastectomy radical. Well, what kept me going was, you know, I had to for the children. I did not want to die and leave my husband to raise three daughters. He was kind of lenient some with the boys, but I knew he'd watch those girls with the short skirts, which they were long when they left for school, but you knew when they got to high school, they were rolling them up. They wanted to be like the other kids. You know, you just have to keep one foot ahead of the other. Like when Frank and I got married, I mean, getting married at 85, you both have property and kids. I think it was scarier then than when we got married really young. We don't realize how much depends on us.
Well, what else can you do? Until he calls you, you have to be here and do the best you can and have faith that he'll help you do what you're supposed to do.
And you are in. You are inspiring your own children.
This is Older and Wiser. I'm Mariah Dennis. This hour, you've been listening to conversations I had with seniors from across Maine. I asked them about how they've been handling the past few months as COVID-19 changes our world, and what advice they have for younger Mainers who are just getting started in life in these strange times. For the last part of our show, we're turning to the future. In my interviews, I asked everyone what the best part about getting older is. Here's Gail.
Oh, God.
What do I have to look forward to?
Well, I don't like the alternative, but there are days when, what do you have to look forward to? Be positive. Keep negative thoughts out of your mind. Look, as a lady said to me one day, don't sweat the small stuff, and it's all small stuff. And in my opinion, that sums it up. It's just one of those things. You look forward to the next day, and whatever bothered you today isn't going to tomorrow. If you do that.
Hope wasn't so sure there was a best part about getting older. What's the best thing about getting older?
About getting older?
Right.
Nothing.
Nothing? No, don't Nothing. Tell me that.
That's true. Enjoy life while you're young. Do everything you possibly can.
There's got to be something good about getting older.
Oh, I don't know what. Achy bones and not sleeping and
don't you feel wiser though, or more confident, or?
Well, sometimes you do, but then, you know, you can get knocked down because you're older and they don't want to listen to you, you know. So, oh, I've kind of enjoyed retirement, even though getting around is limited, but I'm still doing it, so.
Bill Horner appreciates the time growing older gave him to spend with family.
I mean, I've had some physical challenges that go along with aging. I've had two kinds of cancer that have been treated successfully. I'm not letting that slow me down. Fortunately, I feel great. But a lot of it has to do with the fact that my wife doesn't let any grass grow under my feet. And I think the fact that she and I can grow old together, in that kind of relationship that we have, we have a lot of friends, as you might imagine. And then of course our kids, and I'll come back to them again and again and again. I think just, you know, trying to be a rock for them when their lives are challenged.
John also came back to his wife and family.
What has been the best part about getting older?
Well, I think it's been having the time to spend, and I'm fortunate that Marie and I have been married for over 50 years. We're both healthy. We both do things. And we don't do all the things together. We do a lot together. But
Bill Irvine also wasn't sure if there was the best part about getting older.
Well, you know, well, that is an interesting question, because right off the cuff, I would say I could think of a thousand things being younger would be better. You know, getting better as you get older, that is difficult, actually.
But he decided the best part of getting older was finding acceptance of the world around him and seeing the younger generations take action to make the world a better place.
It's a tough one. I tell you, let me see. What's a good thing about getting old? I guess you're settled in your ways in many respects, you know. And I have a better understanding of the world, you know. Things that go on in the world don't upset me as much as they did, you know. I'm kind of a little blasé about what's happening because I've seen it happen so many other times and all blow over. I accept things more. I don't get so irate or annoyed as I would have done when I was younger. I think I more accept the faults of the world. There are a lot of things that people do that I don't agree with, but I accept that more easily now instead of wanting to change it. I think what it really boils down to is that the changes that are necessary in this world, I think it is up basically to young people to change it. Because as I was young, when I was young, I joined the Labour Party, and I helped canvass and help people vote. I would help people, old people. I'd help them down to the polling booth, things like that. I was engaged because I was young. I wanted to change the world. I wanted the world to be a better place. And to a certain extent, there was a certain measure of success. But I think now it is up to the young people in this country, because they have the future that they're, which I do not have. I have a very narrow future. But young people like yourself, you have a tremendous future ahead of you. And you've got to see that the world that you want to live in, you've got to make it happen. And that's I feel that my advice would be change the world to your liking, because no one else is going to do it. And there's a lot of hurdles on the way. There's a lot of people that don't want good things to happen, who are destructive perhaps in their thinking. And if you want things to go well, you've got to take it all in hand and make sure it happens.
Given all the changes the older generations have seen over the decades, and the uncertainty of the world this year amid the impact of the pandemic, I wondered how the seniors I interviewed felt about the world the future generations will inherit. For Mainers living down east, some, like Hope, aren't optimistic about the future, given the decline of traditional industries like fishing, blueberries, and paper in the area.
I was just wondering if you feel like the future, are things improving? Do you think there is hope for future generations?
No, I don't. I think it's very frightening, especially right now. You know, and people need to have more pride in themselves, and they need to not expect to be given everything. I mean, and maybe some of that's, well, even my problem. But, you know, my kids had things, but they had to work, too. When we had the poultry farm, they had to help pick eggs on the weekend, and, you know, they just had to do stuff, that's all. I mean, I'd go help them, but, you know, the only thing I didn't do was blueberries. I said I'd do anything but rake blueberries and paint ceilings. So.
Gail was also skeptical about Maine's future.
What do you think Machias, when, I guess, down east in general, will look like in the future?
I don't know. I'm afraid to think about it, to be honest with you.
Yeah. Do you feel hopeful about the future?
Yes, I think I do. I think I do because I'm hoping that things turn around soon and once this pandemic is over, then people are going to kind of go back to the way it used to be. We used to go visit one another. I couldn't tell you the last time someone came to my house just to visit.
We all hope life will get back to normal as soon as possible, so we can visit our friends and family again without worrying. And we all wonder how this period of time will be looked back upon once it's all over. Bill reminded me of the long scope of history.
It's been a rough ride for this country for 200 years. We've had our ups and downs, and yet the downs are inevitably followed by the ups. I think each generation said, oh, how can we possibly get out of this? And, you know, now, unlike other generations, we're confronted with climate change and the fact that this is really a global phenomenon now. You know, Mariah, with the way the world is going right now, you kind of throw up your hands and say, well, what can I do? What can I affect? What change can I effect? Yeah, we've got a national election coming up. We've got state elections. We know what we hope for, but in our personal world, are we really going to make the difference? Well, we can help, but on the other hand, your family is something that you can impact, you know, just by being, I guess, and staying in touch and, you know, letting them know every day that you love them is about all you can do, really, I think.
And John looked to future generations to provide hope.
Do you feel hopeful about the future?
Yes and no. I have some problems with the political direction, not only of our country, but of our state and our local government.
How do you maintain hope in times when you're not feeling very hopeful?
Well, I'll tell you that part of it is the people that, especially the young people that I deal with, but I talk to people like you going to Scotland to go to college. That's great, and you having picked up someplace this ideas or the time or opportunity to talk to some old fella about his life and about the time, the present, and the future.
Would you say the ambitions of young people today make you feel hopeful?
I think so.
The past few months of living through the coronavirus pandemic have been scary and uncertain. We're living now in a new normal, one that all of us are still trying to get used to. With the difficult times we've gone through this year, I'm so glad to hear advice from some older Mainers. My conversations left me feeling uplifted, and I hope they did for you too. And now it's up to us to take their wisdom to heart and use it for the best. Thanks so much for tuning in to Older and Wiser. Our theme music today was by Kevin McLeod. A huge thank you to John Dudley, Hope Prout, Gail Sprague, Bill Honer, Frank Gray, Ada Hatch, and Bill Irvine for spending time with me on the phone and sharing your wisdom with us.